and welcome to the WTF1 podcast with myself, Amber Jones, and the wonderful Hayden Gullis, who joins me every week. Hayden, how did you find the Japanese Grand Prix? Because I've got some bold opinions, I think.
So I'm going to be completely honest here. I went to bed a little bit too late on Saturday. Woke up early. I did wake up for the race. Mm-hmm. I did then fall asleep. So I had to re-watch the race and catch up. But I will have to say, it's one of those. Okay, right. It was an average race, I think. An average race.
I think
for
that's
this
quite
season,
nice.
It was a good race, which just says that this season hasn't been particularly strong so far. I think in an ideal season, you would potentially even say it was a bad race. Mm-hmm. But for what we've had so far, yeah, okay, there was enjoyable parts.
I don't know, you know, Hayden, I really don't agree with you. This is why I know my opinions might be a little bit different, but I just thought it was an absolute snooze fest, genuinely. And it's early in the morning for us as well, so automatically you're tired.
You
love the
asleep.
Sport. You're watching it and I thought, oh my gosh, something great needs to happen. Yeah. My eyes are slowly closing, and it wasn't because I was tired, because absolute snooze fest. But there were some nice moments you can pick out of the race. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to hold on to them. You know, it was so strong for Ferrari, but I just don't think it was interesting at all.
I feel like we're different kind of fans.
Yeah.
And I feel like you much prefer the action, the drama to always be happening at the front. You enjoy the drama further down, but a race in your head is good if there's a chop and change for the lead quite often, and there is a battle for the lead.
I don't know.
Or there's a new winner, because you liked Australia, which I thought was quite boring.
Yeah.
But there was a different winner, and there's that excitement of, can Carlos bring it home for the win? So you kind of like that side of the sport, whereas I don't mind if there's, you know, someone who dominates at the front.
Winner. Yeah.
But I still would prefer for new winners and for new people to be up there and fighting at the front, 100%. But I can also look past that if there's a little bit of action further down.
Well, normally, I feel like in the past few podcasts, it's been the opposite, where like I've been like, that was a great race. And you're like, no, it was not, Amber. That was so boring. I'm like, no, because Williams this and Alpine this. So I do like to, I think it's maybe midfield and the backwards I actually focus more on. It's when there's at the top, I'm not as interested. I'm just, genuinely, I think because, you know, you had McLaren and Ferrari, we already knew that Red Bull were going to dominate. I just found that it was exciting at times because, you were like, okay, who's going to be third? Is Norris, you know, going to come out on top, or is Leclerc going to catch him?
Yeah.
And that was quite interesting, but I just felt that was the only talk. There was more talking points, of course, but the one I was drawn to, it was just that. So for me, it was quite dull. There wasn't too much, you know, Williams out, first lap, poor Albon, and Ricciardo. So I thought, okay, that's taken those arcs out, isn't it?
Yep.
Stinker for Williams. Now Ricciardo can't prove himself in this race. It's already taken two storylines out for me. Wasn't really looking at the Alpines. Sargeant, you know, no one's really watching him to see how far he's going to get up on the grid. I know. I'm so sorry, Logan Sargeant. It's just my opinion. And then it wasn't great for Mercedes either. So I'm like, bad race. Yeah, what's going on there? So the only thing for me was who's going to be maybe third, fourth, fifth.
I feel like, surprisingly for Japan and this new sort of era of cars, there were actually overtakes. Japan's a very tight, twisty circuit, and it is difficult to overtake. And the cars, you know, they don't follow. It's not worked. They're not very good at kind of sticking close to each other and have the battles that we wanted. But one element that added to it was there's so many different strategies.
Yeah.
And you look at the start and everybody, you know, you have a rainbow of different colours of tyres that drivers are on. And that adds to the race because, you know, someone's on the softs and someone's on the hards trying to go longer. Cool, I'm going to overtake them. Or someone's on the hards, like the Mercedes were doing early on.
Mm-hmm.
They're going long, then they're undercutted by Red Bull. Even Red Bull, you know, are back there and they're overtaking Mercedes. So I'd say that's why it was better than other races, because usually everyone's on the same strategy. They all box at the same time. And then Max Verstappen doesn't really overtake anyone and he just stays in the lead and then that's it. Whereas this time...
I see your point on that.
Overtook Mercedes, overtook Lando Norris. So actually had to make overtakes to get back in that position. Obviously, they've got the advantage. They're on the new tyres. It's going to be better. But you see overtakes. Like, you saw amazing overtakes from Yuki Tsunoda.
Mm-hmm.
Round the outside through the S's. Like, very, very difficult pace to overtake, but fantastic moves from Yuki Tsunoda. So absolutely smashed it there. He had a fantastic weekend.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it was, for me, better than some of the races we've had this season. But if you would look at it over the history of Formula One and you would look at it over some of the top races and some of the worst races, wouldn't be in the stinkers, but, you know, maybe
but not
average, maybe
amazing.
Just below average. But that says a lot about the season that we have at the moment, that Formula One is in this horrible sort of area, that the races are dull. And then when we have one that just has a couple of overtakes, we're like, that was a good race.
Exciting.
Because you're just used to having snooze fests.
Yeah. I love that phrase, you know, snooze fest, my favourite. The thing is, I think what made it quite nice was Perez, because, you know, Max, P1, we know this, it's obviously going to happen. But I think Perez really showed himself, and that was through overtakes as well. When he goes through 130R, you know, it was amazing. I thought, go on, Perez, you're showing to the world and to F1, let me keep the seat. Don't let anyone else take this. Let me stay with Max Verstappen. We're a great team. We're a great duo. So I was actually quite happy for that. But at the same time, I was like, oh, it's a Red Bull 1-2.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Although I'm a bit like, oh, it'd be amazing to throw it in the mix and get Sainz, maybe P2.
By 20 seconds as well.
Exactly.
12 seconds to Perez.
Sainz did great. Leclerc, though, I honestly thought, you know, he was amazing. That strategy, it was difficult. You know, his tyres, obviously, he was losing the degradation and it was really hard for him to stay out.
Yeah.
They were like, no, we're doing a one-stop. Keep going as long as you can. And it worked for him.
Yep.
And he did it amazingly. I think other drivers might have complained a little bit more, or maybe just boxed without being told to box because they can't push it on those tyres anymore. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, good strategy. I think even with a normal strategy like everybody else, I think the Ferrari was the better car than everyone. But the strategy was important to getting past Lando Norris, I think, at the end of the day, because Lando was the one driver that I'd say that could maybe have got close to the Ferraris. Aston, whilst they were good in qualifying, still, you know, off the pace of those guys. And Mercedes are just, whether it's the strategy that they were doing or just the car is nowhere. And I mean, Fernando Alonso's said it, he's come out in the press and he's been asked about, you know, potential Mercedes heat for next season. He's like, well, I look at the moment and we're ahead of them. So why would I go there?
Yeah.
What's the point? Okay, maybe Mercedes are telling him things that we're going to have this for 2026. But right now you look at it and go, why would I?
That seat is not appealing. So when people keep saying Max has happened to Mercedes, I'm like, what world?
Why did Hamilton leave it before the season even started? He jumped. He literally did 2 days in the simulator and was like,
see you later.
I'm out.
I mean, it's great for him now, though, seeing the Ferrari, how well they're performing. Hopefully it
stays like that. It must be so frustrating in a team. And we spoke about it on the fantasy show, and I think I've mentioned it before, that there is always that conspiracy theory that when you are leaving a team, before you've even started the season, you're never going to get preference. Your teammate's always going to get the preference, and maybe your car is going to be slightly slower. I don't know. That's tinfoil hat going on, but we've seen it before with Sebastian Vettel in 2020, massively off the pace of Charles Leclerc. Hamilton now massively off the pace of Russell. Russell is, you know, you be fair to say, is dominating Hamilton so far this season.
Yeah.
So it's one of those where it's like, I mean, thank God he's going, but it must be so frustrating for him in that car right now.
He just can't wait until next year. And he's like, all right, get me in that Ferrari. But then again, you never know what happens. You know, if something changes with the upgrades.
Just some
little tiny thing on that car.
2026, then, that could be amazing. Well, that engine could be incredible for them.
But you never know. But even I think for next year, for the Ferraris, are they still going to have a strong car next year? You just don't know. And then 2026, what if that shakes up the whole thing? And then he's gone, oh, gosh, maybe not staying in Mercedes, but maybe I shouldn't have moved to Ferrari. Like, you just never know what's going to happen.
All he needs is Ferrari to make a engine that's not quite legal again, just like they did before in 2019. And then when they get, you know, asked about it by the FIA, just be like, well, we are going to leave the sport if you give us a penalty, but we'll get rid of the engine for now. So Hamilton will win the eighth, and then the year after, they'll be dreadful because they've got a terrible engine. That's what's going to happen. That's what we need.
You're predicting the future now, Hayden.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Well, let's back to that and we'll see actually happens. So, Williams.
Okay.
Poor Williams. Honestly, they're just having an absolute stinker this season, aren't they? So now the car's damaged. They don't know if they're going to get it back for China. They might get it back for Miami. But again, the cost cap comes into this now because all the expenses they're paying for the damages, is it not going to reach the budget? And then there's nothing left, you know, to upgrade the car.
I mean, potentially.
Or...
I mean, that's why I feel like that's why Schumacher was sort of shown out the door at Haas, because, you know, he had some really good performances in the car, but Saudi, he smashed it up, broke the car. Monaco smashed it up, broke the car. And those damages do add up, especially for teams down there. Like, it is so much more difficult for those teams. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what they're going to end up doing going forward. It's very unfortunate, but the car didn't look particularly great over the course of the weekend. But yeah, Logan Sargeant, first of all, crashing in free practice, and then Alex getting caught up in a crash. It's a racing incident going into turn three. They're still...
Yeah, what are your thoughts?
All cars are close together in that section. It tightens. It's very open through turn one and two, and then it really tightens as you go through the S's. Mm-hmm. Daniel Ricciardo is fully just looking in his left mirror at Lance Stroll because Lance Stroll was around there. Yes, you could say he should have looked in his right mirror for sure to before, because Albon's not just going to disappear, but looking in that right mirror. The mirrors aren't really that great on a Formula One car. They're bouncing, they're vibrating, but then at the same time, they're mainly looking at your rear wing. You're just looking at the sponsorship that's on your rear wing rather than who's next to you. So he's kind of in that blind spot. But maybe if he looked in it a bit early, he might have seen that Albon was there before he went into the blind spot. But I think because he's the car ahead and he's moved across, if you were going to assign any blame, you would put it on Ricciardo, like a 50, 60% Ricciardo, 45, 40% Albon. But it's a racing incident at the end of the day. It's turn three. They're all still very close together. These things kind of happen. It's unfortunate for Ricciardo because it will be assessed by the team. Exactly. It's not just going to be a case of like, don't worry about that one. We'll forget about the race, you know. Don't worry about it. We'll push it back to Miami's your deadline before we potentially look at Lawson coming in. No,
but they're not going to do that. I was saying that to you beforehand. Because it's not necessarily completely his fault, can they disregard that? Can they be like, we'll just give you another race or two, but they're not going to, are they? Because ultimately he is partly to blame in that situation.
Down there, you're only, you know, you can't be judged by, oh, are you winning races? You're getting podiums. No, are you beating your teammate or are you matching your teammate? And he was a lot closer, and it was very, very close in Q2 about which driver went into Q3. Tsunoda got the upper hand. He sneaked into Q3, just ahead of Ricciardo. I think that's the best sort of way to compare those two in that session. And I think Ricciardo did a good job. I don't think the time difference between the two drivers should really be looked at to be like, ah, Ricciardo sucks. He lost out. That's 1-0 to Yuki there.
Yeah.
Okay, it is, but it's not like a massive deficit, so it's okay. But at the same time, you know, Yuki went through there two restarts, a lot of cars around him, and he didn't make any collisions. Mm-hmm. So that's how a team is probably going to be assessing that, you know. And Formula One is just one of those cutthroat sports that if you do make mistakes, if you're not quite up to par, then potentially you will be showing the door. So I hope for him, he has a really strong Chinese Grand Prix. He's won there previously, so hopefully for him, he can have a strong result.
Or something.
Yeah, getting the points.
I think it's the pressure potentially as well.
He just needs to beat his teammate.
Yeah.
But Yuki is on fire at the moment. And I'm loving it, not for a sense of like, oh yeah, I love Daniel Ricciardo's downfall. No, but I love
the praise
that Yuki's kind of getting now from people. I feel like he was never really underrated, but more underappreciated.
I think
so people never really spoke about him.
Errors. People thought, you know, he's a fantastic driver, but he kept making little mistakes.
Yeah.
So then people were looking at that like, oh, you know, is that a driver that you'd want going forward in your team? Can I support that driver? But I think now he's really shining through.
Yeah,
he impressed me massively.
Apart from Saudi, I think he's had a very strong season so far. Bahrain was kind of just screwed with strategy. Saudi lost his head with the mags and stuff. So I would fully say, yeah, Yuki messed up there.
Yeah.
But he was strong in Australia, strong again in Japan, making some mighty fine moves, snuck into Q3. And you've got to take advantage if someone out of that top five team, Lance Stroll, had a poor qualifying. If somebody's going to do that, you have to take advantage. And he was the one to do it. You have to be the top out of those bottom teams. And he did.
Yeah, he's got that ruthlessness about him, which is great. And obviously, like I said before, maybe that falls into, I can make a mistake because you're being so ruthless. But I think he's getting there now. Mm-hmm. I think he's really finding his driver craft of like, right, I can't push it too much because something's going to happen. But I'm still going to push it enough to, you know, be known as that driver that takes those risks. High risk, high reward in Formula One. But with Williams, I think there's a lot of question now on Albon because everyone gave Sargeant a lot of stick and they still do. Even I make a bit of a joke about it.
Yeah.
But now Albon's crashing the car.
Twice.
So exactly. So you can't now put all the blame on Logan Sargeant. It didn't help. You know, he went off and he managed to save the car in the race, thankfully. But you can't put all of it. Now you're looking at both the drivers like, what's going on here? Yeah, Albon's a great driver and we've seen that. But then again, he also got stick, you know, when he's in Red Bull and people were saying maybe he's not as fantastic driver as we think he is. Now we're seeing those mistakes slip into Williams. He was doing great, but I think he's a bit of like yin and yang at the minute. Yeah. One minute he's doing fantastic for the team and then now there's another problem.
Yeah, I can't fully remember what happened with the Australia crash because it's a few weeks ago now. I feel like it was a very similar one to that he had in 22. But yeah, I mean, for Albon, it's a difficult situation, that turn one. I do think at the same time, talking about Ricciardo being at fault, I do think at the same time, Albon, you're never really going to overtake around the outside in turn three. It's tight. The driver on the inside has got the upper hand. He's got the inside line. He's probably going to get ahead through the corner. So to be there and to try and hold on, and he did try to back out of it in all fairness, because he was a lot further alongside when Ricciardo started to move over. He tried to back out of it, but it just was too little too late. But I wouldn't just fully say, oh yeah, that's Albon's fault. He's crashed the car again. Oh no.
Yeah.
But Australia, yes. But maybe there's something wrong with the car. I did really enjoy Twitter and how everyone becomes a F1 analysis and all this sort of thing. You're seeing arrows pointing on screenshots. There was Logan's crash in FP3. So everyone's done it on the game. If you've ever played the F1 game at home, oh my God, Dunlop curve in Suzuka, you touch that curb on the outside, it just sucks you in, doesn't let go of you, and then you just get further dragged out into the gravel and then you're off into a barrier. Every single person right now who has played the game has done that same mistake. And I think he just carried too much speed. He just carried too much speed through the corner, got on the curb, dragged him out. But then you've got, you know, the Twitter experts who are like, oh, the arrow's here, he's turning the wheel and the car, that wheel's going that way and there's something wrong with the car here. And it's just like, no, he just understeered. He just took too much speed. He understeered. Degner too as well, I think maybe, you know, just got a little bit of understeer on that one. But the car just skated off. And so I don't think, obviously, the car is perfect. And I think that they definitely need to look into how they can build upon it and just make it increase the drivability of the car, because clearly both drivers are struggling, because both drivers are putting in barriers and are, you know, crashing the car, and you want to make that car as drivable as possible so they're not crashing it.
But
because
then Williams are obviously claiming that the car isn't up to scratch, but it's better, because they were like, you know, we're racing against the Alpines, Haas, RB, whereas they weren't. They were like always the last two, like P19 and P20. So for them, they look like they've made an improvement, but at the same time, the drivers are struggling massively. So there's way more improvements to be made. This has set them back massively now, because now they need to actually just fix the car they've got. They can't focus on upgrading and doing all these things. They've got to fix the problem now. So I think it's going to be very unfortunate for Williams, but maybe we'll see them in a few races finding their feet again. Unfortunately, not this time. China, I think, is way too soon.
Maybe.
Same with Miami. They'll get it back, but there's still going to be all these issues.
I was wondering during the red flag, though, whether Logan Sargeant would be pulled out of his car and Albon would then given...
No, that was all over Twitter. That was everywhere. Everyone was like, right, Logan, out the car, Albon in. Imagine if they did that, honestly.
Could you imagine?
The uproar in Formula One. But then now, like, then that's what I'm saying.
Maybe it'll happen next time in China. Like, you know, in all fairness, when they did it in Australia, it was the right decision. Because Albon, okay, he was he was literally like less than a second off of points. And I do think, if you're going to give it to the, if you're going to have the best chance of scoring points, you've got to give it to the driver. Because as we've spoken before, like Yuki scoring points at Japan, there could only be that one place, that one opportunity. So you want the best driver to try and sneak that. It's not like Williams can both get two drivers into the points. Then you'd be like, okay, yeah, Logan's got a good chance still to score points. But there's that one opportunity if somebody isn't in that top 10 from the top five teams. And you've got to get your best driver in to take the opportunity.
So you think potentially that could happen at China?
If the car is broken
and they
don't
only
have a chassis,
one car.
And they don't have a chassis for China, I think it will happen again. I think they'll make the same decision. They made it very, very last minute call in Australia.
Oh, I don't know how I feel about that, because obviously this is Albon again. And then at the same time, you know, you do want them to be team players. You want to do what's the best thing for the team, putting the stronger driver in there. But if that driver keeps making mistakes, whether it's a fault of someone else or his own, if I was Logan Sargeant, I'm not Logan Sargeant, and I'm so angry for him. I'm like, it's very unfair to keep doing that. Maybe once or twice, but I'd be saying to the team, it's not me. This is my car. Please stop giving it to Albon. Like, surely he can put his foot down at some point.
Oh, yeah, potentially. But, you know, he hasn't got a certified contract for next year.
Yeah.
So if he starts, you know, rightfully so, throwing his toys out the pram in that sort of sense.
You'd
but like I say, rightly
enough.
So.
Yeah. But it's the best.
Then
the
team could be like, well, okay, we'll go with someone else for next season. Like, it's not a problem. If you're going to be like this, we want a team player. And you're not showing us that you're the number one. So right
I
now you have to be a team player.
My argument would be, though, yeah, but the second driver keeps crashing the car. So you're going to go put him out there. What if he crashes the car again? He's, and then
but
I'd be like,
Logan
I had a
Logan has
spin.
Also had his fair share of crashes.
He has.
Like, and, you know, he didn't,
recently,
it's not like he did amazingly in Japan.
No, he
finished P17.
Yeah, but so, recently, I'd say, come on, he's crashed it twice and damaged the car.
Australia, fair enough, I agree.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Albon crashed the car. For Japan, it was a racing incident where somebody closed the door on him and he put Albon in the wall. If the car's broken, that one I feel like fans will be a bit more lenient. Whereas Australia, completely understandable. Like, why is Albon... Albon has crashed the car. Why does he then get Sargeant's car?
Yeah.
Whereas this one is a bit more like, Ricardo closed the door on him. Bit of a racing incident.
Because it wasn't so much his fault. Gosh, the uproar that's going to happen if that... goes on.
Yeah,
I do think people
will
be
very,
very angry at
that. Outside the sport because there's nothing going on track.
Like from this race. Okay, what are you rating this race out of 10, Hayden? We're going to have different opinions here, aren't we?
No, I don't think so. I think if I was to take out season recency bias and judge it as a race, it's a... I want to go where you're going.
No.
I would say, you know, if we had... a top 10 listing, it would be a 4, right? But we're doing a top 5, a 5 rating. So it's either a 3 or a 2. I'm on the fence. This is weird. This is not how it usually works. It's the other way around.
Exactly. We're changing the energy swap between us, Hayden.
Let's just go average. It was mid. It was 3.
I think that's very generous.
Potentially. I think people will say that. And I think they're right to do so.
Yeah. But I see your
maybe
points
a bit of recency
for why
bias
you're swaying more towards... No, I think it's fair enough because with all the strategy problems at play, I think that did up the race a little bit. You know what I actually really liked about the Japanese Grand Prix? And it was not the on-track action. Did you see that video of that kid and George Russell?
Yes.
That,
yes.
I can give the race a
why I love
10,
Japan. The fans
10,
are the
I
best.
Know.
Japanese fans are the best fans of Formula One. Yeah. The stuff that they bring to the circuit, the hats with cars on top, the clothing,
it's
just such the cosplaying,
great vibe. Yeah.
Dressing up as drivers. Honestly, it is the best fans and I'd love to see more of it around the world.
Yeah.
But then it would also take away that special element of going to Japan and seeing this if
everyone
does it.
Did that.
But so I just love going there. And I hope that we continue to go there for years to come.
I love that enthusiasm. But yeah, that that video, loved it. So from that, from a weekend perspective, I give it a 5 because it was great. But yeah, from the race, I'm going to give that a 2.
2.
2 out of 5.
It's fair enough.
Snooze fest.
I think maybe I've just gone to a 3 because it gave me one thing that I desire from the changes that I want for Formula One, and that is to allow for different tyre strategies. And I bang on about F1 2012 so many times, but that is one of the reasons why I love that season so much, is because some people would try and hold out for a one stopper, some people go for the two stopper, or hold out for a two stopper whilst everyone's doing three stoppers. And then you had that bunching up and that overtaking element, which we kind of saw a little bit of Japan. And that's what I want more of. I want that change of tyre to give us more open strategies and to have something more dynamic across the board rather than I'm going to do mediums and then I'm going to do hards and we're all done. And if a safety car comes out around that window, perfect. We all pit at the same time and it's boring.
And then that's that. Let's hope we see great action in China.
Yeah.
Okay, Hayden, our first hot take is on Facebook from one of our top fans, Michael Wilkie. And they say that Albon is losing the star power / shine he regained last year.
Okay. I think it's too early to tell. I think there's been some really strong performances from him, to be fair, this season. Yeah, Australia, just missing out. I think if you were to rank the bottom 5 teams based on pure race pace, Haas, I feel like, are number one out of that bottom 5. I think they've both got 2 strong drivers that are getting the maximum out of the car. And yeah, I would put them there. Then I'd actually put RB. I think Yuki has the ability to go above the Haases. Daniel just below the Haas. Yeah, so then Daniel there or in the mix with the Haas.
Okay.
So I'd say those two. Then I'd even say it is the stake team. I'd say potentially they are next. take out the pit stops, and I'd say they're there. Bottas is a brilliant qualifier and can get the maximum out of the car. I do think that's where Zhou is lacking compared to Bottas. We've seen it with Bottas before when he was in Mercedes.
Yeah.
Could match Lewis Hamilton in qualifying. And he had that massive long of Q3's streak that he had. So I'd say Stake next. Then I'd say Williams. Then I'd say Alpine. So I'd say Williams aren't the best out of that bottom five, but I do think Albon has the ability to get amongst with the States. Even the Haas, you know, can be up there. So I think, yes, okay, crashed in Australia and then got taken out, you know. Not by purpose of Ricciardo. I'm not putting the fault on Ricciardo, but just to say, you know, it's definitely not Albon's fault that he's out of that race. So I think it's sort of too early to say, and I don't think so. I think he needs a car to either be better or to move to a team that is better to sort of keep that star power up, because the more he stays down there, the more he's going to kind of be forgotten about. But he's doing the right thing. He's smashing his teammate.
Yeah. From what I'm getting from what you're saying there is basically he's not in the correct car to be able to say whether this statement is true or not, because the car's having so many issues. That's why you're seeing him, you know, crash or damage the car. It's not necessarily his fault. Also now in Japan with this incident. Again, I think you're going to have two different sides to this story, because, you know, people will say that potentially it is Ricciardo's fault because he should have been more careful and he should have looked both sides. But then at the same time, people will also say that Albon should not have put his car in that position to be able to find himself in that situation. So I'm on the fence with this one slightly, Hayden, only because I can see it. But I think my mind changes a lot. After each race, I look at the driver and go, how did they perform in this race? Last week, they were fantastic. They were amazing. Top 10, whatever. Move to the next one. I go, oh, that was a really poor performance from them. You have to look at all the different variables. You know, was it other people? Was it the strategy? Was it the car? Is it the driver craft? And I think with Albon, yes, the car really affects him massively. But I do think he's making a lot of errors recently. And I like with Japan,
like
I'm slightly on the fence. He should not have positioned the car there.
Yeah, yeah, that's
but
fair
then,
enough.
There's nothing you can do. You find yourself there. You know, he can't back out of it. So it's a little bit too late. So it is a racing incident. But I've always had this with Albon.
But then what else this season? Because what else has he? Where else has he put his foot wrong?
He has done great. And at the start, I thought, wow, his shine is there. I see he's going to move to a different team, you know, in the next few years, and he's going to get that back and his reputation will be up. But it's just these little, little mistakes. You know, Australia also. And then with Sargeant getting out of the race because of him, I'm like, that's Albon's fault. And again, this is Albon's fault. With a mixture of racing incidents. So that's why I'm just very, very on the fence with this one. I think give him a little bit more time. Let's see. And maybe at the end of the season, we can say it's the car that's just absolutely rubbish. It's not Albon.
Well, I just fully disagree. I completely disagree.
I love our disagreements, Hayden.
I look back just now whilst you were talking. I look back at results for the season just to refresh myself. And Bahrain, P15, not amazing, but beat Logan Sargeant, who was last
out of the
finishes, which I think everyone finished. Saudi, P11, just missed out on points. And you're in a field where if all top guys finish, then, you know, I think it was just Lance Stroll who crashed out in that one. Hülkenberg got the point. And then you look at the next race, which was Australia, filled in. Yes, okay, he had the crash and it cost him his chassis. Very unlucky with that crash.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can go into the wall like Zhou did in Saudi. It's not a broken chassis. They're all fine. You know, rebuild the car. They're ready to go. So I think he just got very unfortunate with that, but finished in that race again, P11. And then we come to Japan and he has, he's crashed out in that one, but full racing incident. Don't really think you can put too much. Yeah, okay. You're not necessarily going to make the overtake around there, but you're a racing driver, so you still expect them
to
go for
push.
It rather than be like, okay, I'm just going to sit back here and do nothing. But in all those races that he has finished, where's Logan Sargeant? Massively behind him. And as I've said before, when I discuss about Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo, the biggest thing that you can compare about those people is not necessarily how many points they're scoring, but it's the head-to-head battles. How many times are they beating each other in qualifying? How many times are they beating each other in the races? And it is fully one-sided. So I think people are just taking the recency bias of, oh, he crashed in Japan and he's crashed in Australia. That's cost Logan Sargeant the car. I'm not quite happy about it. Yeah, I don't think Alex Albon is the driver that we all thought he was. So I think it's just recency bias. And
it is true, though. That's, I think, people obviously do, even myself, you'll forget about the first two races. Even with Lance Stroll, I do this all the time. When he has a good race, I'm like, wow, he's a very good driver.
Recency bias exactly. Anyone's ever heard.
Then he has a crash. Everyone's like, he's the worst Formula One driver in history. And then he does good. And everyone chops and changes. I think you do see this a lot in Formula One. It's so easy to do that because if the driver's not performing, what are you meant to do? You can't back that driver. But then let's see how they perform next. So I do think I'm on the fence with this one, but I want to give Albon more time before I make the super bold statement. So spiciness level, I'm going to go with a 2. I can't say yet. There's enough to debate. We had a nice little disagreement, but there's not enough to say.
Spiciness level 1, I think this is just saying something opposite to what everyone else is saying because you just kind of want to be a little bit different rather than being like, I actually fully believe this. And it's like, oh, actually, yeah, you've opened my mind to maybe think of it that way. It's just like, no, come on, just open your mind to the rest of the season, look at the rest of the results and be like, and compare it to his actual teammate and be like, okay, cool, yeah, no. The star power is kind of still there because Russell had that huge star power and he was going up against Kubica and Latifi. And everyone was like, oh my God, yeah, he's supposed to be like a future world champion. So yeah, I think 1, I disagree with it.
Give him a chance and we'll see on the next one. Okay, Hayden, are you ready for this hot take?
I am.
So, this is on Twitter from Generic Nickname. And they say that Lance Stroll would be a way better driver if he raced for a different team.
Okay.
Now, there's a lot to debate on this one. I feel like the comments might go crazy because everyone has something to say about Lance Stroll. But Hayden, I don't agree with this one.
You don't?
Automatically, straight away, my answer is I don't agree with this one. I don't think if he was in Red Bull or Ferrari, of course he'd be up in the positions naturally. You're in a better car, but not a better driver. I think he's still the same driver.
I will agree with this one.
Oh
yes,
I
have said
today,
this before on I think this podcast that I think Lance Stroll would be a better driver if his dad didn't own the team or he didn't have a guaranteed contract every year. Like, yes, okay, Lance Stroll's contract's kind of like underclosed and nobody knows about it, but everyone just assumes, well, he's going to be in that seat next year. So he's always got a seat. So there's never that pressure, you know? And as they say, diamonds are formed under pressure. So he never has that pressure to actually be like, okay, I really need to get this performance here, other than just fan scrutiny. It's just fans against him. And you know, as athletes, they've learned throughout their lifetime to be able to block out social media hate and all that sort of stuff, so they know how to not listen to it.
Yeah.
So that sort of stuff means nothing. But if somebody's coming into the office, be like, look, you're under pressure. If you don't perform, you're going to be out next season. Okay, cool. I need to buck up my ideas. But I also, and this is why I back him so much, I do think that there is a good driver there. And there always has been inconsistencies, yes, fully, you know, but drivers have that. But you compare him against teammates. Fernando Alonso, in my mind, is one of the greatest drivers Formula One has seen. One of the greatest drivers who's had one of the worst timings in Formula One. Smashed it with Renault. And then after that, McLaren was good, but Ferrari was also there and its two teammates fighting. Then goes back to Renault, weren't a good team. Then go to Ferrari. They were okay, but he dragged a sort of, you know, fourth best car sometimes into a championship fight. Then goes to McLaren and they sucked. All right. There was loads of hype about McLaren Honda. And it sucked. And then he moves to Alpine, not the greatest team, sort of good midfield, Aston Martin on the rise. So he's never had that luck. Whereas Sebastian Vettel, I think, really strong driver, but has had that great time and has always been in the right place at the right time. Yeah. Red Bull, when they were dominating, he was the lead man, smashed it. Ferrari, when they were also, you know, a team that could fight with Mercedes, was there. Unfortunately, a few incidents, a bit of bad luck as well, and lost out on fully challenging for the title. So I think you can compare those two in that way. And Lance Stroll up against Sebastian Vettel was fairly even. Like, it wasn't like Sebastian Vettel wiping away Lance Stroll like Fernando Alonso did. So you put up Lance Stroll against Sebastian Vettel, and you're like, yeah, there's a good driver there. You look at him against, he's also had Perez, who I do rate as a good driver. Yeah, he's not world champion material, and Max Verstappen is wiping him away, but he's Max Verstappen. He is also up there as one of the greatest drivers that we've had in Formula One. So, but to come back to the point, that's why I do agree that he would be better in a different in a team different because team. There would be that pressure yeah. to get those results.
He can't relax then, can he? I remember we spoke about this beforehand and I did agree with you then. But now when I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I still don't know, because maybe he will perform better because there is the pressure. So he's learning, he's pushing himself more, he's finding his driver craft. Maybe he's a little bit too relaxed at the minute. But I just can't imagine him. I just don't see him being a Perez, because obviously he's not, in my opinion, world champion material.
No, I fully agree.
But I don't see him being like the second to the world champion, like a Perez or a Bottas. I still don't put him in that regard yet. I think he would have to really prove it to me beforehand. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, and I'm going to bring up my favourite man, Roman Grosjean. I feel like that Lance Stroll has similar qualities with a Grosjean, because they are good drivers. I know they get a lot of hate. And even now in Indy, you know, Grosjean is getting hate for not being a fantastic driver.
Yep.
And I just think it would be the same if it was Stroll. I think if Stroll goes another series, that's just who he is as a driver. Mm-hmm. He's a good driver. That's it. You know, you're not pushing it. They make a lot of mistakes. That's why they get the hate that they do. But there's nothing out of the world.
Maybe that's why I like Roman Grosjean at the same time. I did enjoy Grosjean when he was in the sport.
Like,
and he had fantastic pace in that Lotus.
Exactly.
But the inconsistencies were there massively. Maybe I'd say even more inconsistent than Lance Stroll. I'd say Lance Stroll, I hate watching Lance Stroll on a Saturday because qualifying, he sucks. He is the worst qualifier I have ever seen. But come race day, he just then shines. Like, yeah, okay, he started, what, P7, 18? Was down there in Q1, like P16 maybe it was. And then, you know, comes back to P12 in the race.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows how to come back through the field. And we've seen this in the past where it's like, oh, he's out in Q1 again. Oh, but he's in the points of the race.
Yeah.
And yeah, it kind of helps when you have the car deficit and they're better. But it always just seems to be the way that he just sucks on a Saturday. Just let him take the day off and just let him do the racing, because Saturday is useless for Lance Stroll. But I do think that there is a strong driver there. And I disagree in the way that I think you could put him in as a number two. Never as a number one driver for Lance Stroll. I don't think any team should really be looking at him right now as how he's performing. But you also got to think that he is still quite a young driver. Like, he came into the sport at 18. And yes, okay, he's been there for quite a few years, but I've spoken about it before that you shouldn't necessarily take how many seasons of someone's experience, but also their age into account. Because, you know, as someone who is 27, I look back at myself at 23 and that's a completely different person.
I think you're being too nice now, Aidan.
Why?
Because, you know, you look at the grid now and a lot of them are very young.
A lot of them are very
young. And
they're
fantastic drivers.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really don't think it's an age thing.
But a lot of them who are young also make a lot of mistakes.
They do. And we said this about Verstappen, you know, when he first came in. Yes, you see that star power straight away, but he was making mistakes.
Yeah. There was that immaturity of just making rash moves or saying silly things to the press, because there was still that immaturity there. And now you look at Max Verstappen and he's super mature and just a very, very consistent driver, one of the most consistent drivers you've ever seen. So I do think that you've got to take age sometimes into account and allow people to mature in that sense.
Pulling our straws. I definitely disagree, but I do see your point. I do see your point. You do kind of have to bring age into it, but then if you can compare to the other drivers on the grid and they're younger or the same age and they're not doing that, then it's like, how much can you actually bring age
you
into
look
it?
You fully look at the grid, and the only one I would say who is a young driver right now who isn't making mistakes, maybe two, I'd say. Maybe I'll add three to that. I'll go with Russell. I don't think he's making as many mistakes. There are the odd ones still, and we've spoken about
then.
It.
Yeah.
And I have said before that you've got to take his age into account. Lando, I don't really feel like makes that many mistakes. I feel like he's quite consistent. But also Oscar Piastri, two drivers, both at McLaren, both very consistent drivers. And that's always been Oscar's way, that is like just consistency. You're not the outright fastest driver, but you're smart with it and you know where to place the car and you know how to sort of stay out of trouble and get the results in
I'd
the
also
end.
Add Charles into the mix though,
I would
because
not.
It's strategy.
I would not.
It's always strategy or
no,
something
it's
with
not
Ferrari
always,
that
sometimes
goes wrong.
Sometimes
when
he
it
has
is
that
him.
Car on the knife edge.
I am stupid. We all remember that. But
and France as well, you know, he was in the lead and he lost the car. Yes, okay, he
but
likes a car that's on
rare.
The knife edge, but then he falls off that knife's edge. But I do think, again, Charles is going through that stage that Max Verstappen did in recent years to become that mature driver. And that's what I hope Charles can go through And then when he has a car capable of winning the championship, he has that maturity to challenge for the championship across the season. But I wouldn't put Charles in that area that you'd say
when
he's
you were
super
like
consistent.
Saying the drivers, I
and
thought,
I'd probably even potentially
would.
Take out George Russell.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, George Russell, I was still a bit like, oh,
I'd probably
I don't
take
know
him
if
out
I put
that,
him
to
there.
Be fair.
Debatable. What are you rating this hot take, Hayden?
We've really debated about it. But I suppose because Lance Stroll, I love the man, and I would defend that
you
man.
You knew there was going to be a
as
debate.
As much as I possibly can. Sometimes I'm like, come on, you're not making it any easier for me. but I'm still realistic in the sense that I can still call him out and be like, look, he's not a world champion material driver, but I still like
you're not
him.
Deluded,
you know, he's still a good driver, I'd say. But in terms of spicy, I don't think it's that spicy. I think it's a 2-1 because I think a lot of people, because of the mindset they have around Lance Stroll, be like, yeah, no, fully. I'm thinking of it the wrong way.
That he would be a better driver.
I think
it is spicy because everyone's going to say, have their two pence. Loads of people will disagree, they're going to be like, he's rubbish wherever you go, he doesn't deserve to be in the sport, but there'll be Lance Stroll fans that are like, no, like you are, and really back him. So I think it's quite spicy, this one.
They'll be like, oh, if he was in a Red Bull, he'd still get out in Q1, which I fully agree because he's shocking at qualifying. But he'd overtake the whole field and then finish second in the race. So I think...
You're having a hard time rating this hot take.
Yeah. I've been on the fence quite a lot today.
We've swapped completely.
Let's go for a 4. It's a spicy one that people would be like, yeah, no, I disagree with it. Mm-hmm. But I think there is a good debate around it that Lance Stroll fans will, there are a few of us, but there are Lance Stroll fans.
Yes.
Would debate it still.
Okay, so you're going for a 4.
Yeah.
I was actually going to put it at a 3 because smack bang in the middle, there's two sides to this story. So it's not super spicy where you're like, oh my gosh, this is an out of this world hot take. Who would ever think that Lance Stroll? But you know, it's still debatable. So Hayden, are you ready for the last hot take?
I am. Give it to me.
This one is from Bedheadman on Twitter. And they say Piastri should have been on Norris's pace by now based on the hype.
Okay.
It's quite spicy, I'd say.
Yeah.
Super debatable. I think so.
Big gap, to be fair, in Japan. Lando Norris, 29 seconds behind Max Verstappen, and we've got Oscar Piastri, 47. So a 20-second gap is quite a lot. I do think he's been there with Norris, and he has beaten Norris on occasions, but I also do think that there is those gaps. But he's not as much off Lando as Daniel was, and I do think that they have a very strong pairing, but I bring it back. It's his second season.
Exactly.
He has still performed very well for a rookie last season and a driver in their second season.
That's what's going through my mind instantly.
So I would say I disagree. And he's still very young. So again, I bring it back to age. Let these guys mature. Mm-hmm. Let them find their way. Yeah, okay, they're going to be blisteringly quick in some events. But some races, they might, you know, make these little odd mistakes here and there and be off the pace. Mm-hmm. But that's how you get a better driver, by making mistakes. What's the point of just being as clean as possible and as cautious as possible if you're never going to learn from it and never get better?
Because then you're always going to fall to be the number two driver that's just safe, that just gets points. I definitely disagree with this one. I think Piastri has really impressed me so much this season and last season as well. Again, age does come into it at times. I think when a driver's been there for like 4 or 5 years plus, then I don't think age comes into it. But Piastri is still so new into the sport. So of course it is going to come into this now. Yep. We know Lando is an amazing driver as well. So when you're going to put still a young driver, but a more experienced and a driver that has wowed people against a new driver that's just come into the sport, you really can't compare them yet. It's way too, I think, cruel to compare them to. So definitely not. I think Piastri is a strong driver. It was unfortunate for him this race. And I think maybe that's why these comments are coming in, because they're like, Piastri was set to do really well. Yeah. People think, you know, P5, P6 or something. But obviously he didn't perform great and he's owned up to that. And he said there were issues. But no, I think this hot take is quite harsh on our Piastri.
Yeah, I think it's just recency bias. You've looked at the last race and not looked at the others. I just quickly looked at the qualifying to refresh myself. And Bahrain matched him. Matched Lando Norris. Saudi beat Lando Norris. Australia was 2 tenths off of Lando, 2.5. And then Japan was 3 tenths off of Lando in qualifying. Yeah, 3 tenths off. So, you know, you're 3-1 in the qualifying head-to-heads and you've matched him twice. Or you've matched him once and you're on average probably about 2 tenths off. Which I think is not a problem for a driver in their second season.
Exactly.
Up against a driver who's in his fifth now? Yeah, fifth or sixth season. Both drivers are very young. Yeah, okay, they're both very young. But I do think that he's definitely finding his feet and has impressed more than other drivers. But like I say, I don't think you'll get your taking on Oscar Piastri because he is the outright quickest driver, like a Lewis Hamilton or a Charles Leclerc over like a one lap, or a Max Verstappen over one lap. But you're getting him because of that consistency throughout a race, and you know, and that level head that I think is going to really show in future seasons. Mm-hmm. And he will be, you know, I understand if people look at him and go, yeah, future world champion material, because he certainly should be thought about like that.
I think so. If you put him in a super strong car, I definitely think he's world champion material. And he was one to watch at the start of the week, and obviously it didn't pan out the way he wanted it to. I put him in my fantasy team. You know, we were speaking to lots of different people and everyone was like, yeah, the McLaren's going to be really strong. Yeah. Lando probably will come out on top for Japan, but Piastri should be there also. Yeah. So just unfortunate what happened this weekend. I think he's a fantastic driver, one to watch in the future for sure. So what are you rating this hot take?
Rating the hot take, again, I think it's just like the album one. It's just looking at the last result and being like, oh, I think this. So I'm just, it's been quite low this week on them. So I'm saying, yeah, it's a two.
Not super spicy.
Not super spicy. Because it's just looking at the last result and people just be like, nah. It's one of those where people just look at that and be like, I'm not even going to worth engaging with that, because it's just, it's not too over the top to sort of clickbait people and be like, how dare you say this?
Yeah.
But then it's not drawn enough back there. Everyone's like, yeah, I agree. So I think
he's still a new driver. Give him time. I agree. I'd say I knew my opinion straight away on this one. So I say it's about a two as well. Not really spicy, but enough there to have a little bit of a debate. Thank you so much for sending in your hot takes. Don't forget to send us some more. And Hayden and I will rate on how spicy they are. We'll see you on the next one.